I'm Tom Batchelor with Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host, and we're joined by Jonathan Sayer, who is going to help us understand how the capitals outside of Cairo are watching the events in Cairo and in Jerusalem in these last hours and given the task ahead of them. Jonathan, I'll go quickly because I want to go from Beirut to Damascus to Sana'a and now to Kabul with the firefighting along the frontier with Pakistan. How does Beirut see this peace deal, given the eyes of Hezbollah watching and waiting for rearming? Is this a break for them, or is this a blow for them? Good evening.
Good evening. It can go two ways for them. The question is whether the axis of resistance led by Tehran wants to relaunch another wave of attacks and whether they can, in fact, have the resources to do so. So we've, of course, discussed sanctions against the Islamic Republic, and we've talked about how the axis is severely weakened. So is this the time to retreat? Rationally speaking, it would be a good time for them because snapback is in place now. The cash flow has been cut off for the most part. They lost Syria. So it would, if there was one time for them to actually rebuild to their capacity, now would be the prime time. Now, whether they're happy with the fact that this deal was brokered, one, by the Trump administration for him to take the political win, they're probably not happy about that. But I'm definitely certain that they're also concerned as we're talking about the peace deal, with the fact that Trump Hamas actually gave up all the hostages and has no longer a leverage against Israel.
Bill, you have a question.
John, 2 years after Hamas's attack on October 7th, 2023, how do you assess the axis of a resistance? Like, which one of these groups surprised you? Which one came out on top? And which one has been the biggest disappointment in your estimation?
The biggest surprise would certainly be with the Iraqis. I thought we would have seen more movement from the PMF, or at least certain factions that are aggressively Iran-backed. I know what they all are, but some are more problematic than others, like Kataib. It was interesting to see that, one, post-October 7th, they were not as involved. I mean, of course, they launched a few attacks, but nothing that great. And they did not really come into Tehran's aid during the 12-day war either. And that has been the most surprising angle, which suggests that, again, Washington's pressure works. The fact that this administration has been pressuring and designating different PMF factions and preventing the PMF from getting enshrined into the Iraqi political landscape, that has actually yielded results. So we're not seeing much movement from these groups. Ultimately, I think the fact that Hezbollah was not able to come and aid the very weak Bashar Assad post-October 7th says everything about their capacity. That, paired with the pager attacks and the lack of cash flow, they're out of manpower and they're also out of money. So it is a very precarious situation for them.
I'll put two capitals together. Damascus, with Shara returned from his triumph at the UN, and Ankara, with Erdogan looking to maintain his influence in Damascus, but also his neo-Ottomanist dreams. How does Iran view Ankara at this point as a threat, and how does it view Damascus as a, to be determined, as a recruit for the future, or as an adversary?
I think it's very accurate to describe Ankara's new ambition as neo-Ottoman. Perhaps we're seeing a wave of Turkish nationalism with a strong emphasis on the Muslim Brotherhood. And that is something that the Islamic Republic has long saw as a frenemy. So, of course, they're friends when it comes to dealing with the Israelis, or at least they had been for the longest time. Qatar and Turkey, Qatar, of course, funds Hamas, but Turkey has also sheltered Hamas and facilitated the procurement of a lot of their weaponry. So on that front, they seem to be aligned, but that is the only area where they're aligned. So when it comes to the broader Middle East, they've been fighting for God knows how long at this point. When we talk about the Caucasus, Turkey's win was Iran's loss. When we talk about Syria again, Turkey's win was also Iran's loss. As we look at the geopolitics of the region, every proxy that Iran had put its bets on, it somehow weakened, and every entity that Turkey sought to back is now stronger. So Islamic Republic is definitely on its back foot.
Bill, you have a question.
Would you include the Houthis? Did they come out on top? The Iranians come on out on top with the Houthis? Or do you think that they've lost in this?
Excellent question. Of course, we cannot talk about the axis of resistance without talking about the Houthis being the main, force provoking the Israelis and attacking them. I think the American peace deal said a lot. The fact that they signed an agreement with the United States indirectly behind closed doors suggests that they had enough leverage to actually force the major campaign launched by Pete Hegseth to at least they were able to counter it to a great extent. So they continue to be a main issue. And if you actually track Israeli security report, you constantly see attacks coming from the Houthis as well. And dismantling and making sure that they disarm is so much harder with the Houthis than other groups, because they perhaps require the least amount of manpower and resources for them to launch these attacks.
The breaking news over the weekend, Jonathan, as you know, was that there was a firefight of some nature with heavy casualties reporting on both sides between Pakistan and Afghanistan, between Kabul and Islamabad. And at some point, Iran commented that it was ready to lend a hand for a peace deal. Iran's relationship with Kabul is not transparent to me, and its relationship to Pakistan is not obvious to me either. What is Iran's part in this, given that it shares a border, and the Baluch, I believe, are always in turmoil in Iran?
When we talk about the Tehran-Kabul relations, the Islamic Republic has been funding the Taliban against the United States for years. So they were perhaps part of the moving factor that facilitated the U.S.'s withdrawal as well. So Iranian weapons and Iranian funding has supported the Taliban against the United States forces. And now with the U.S. post-U.S. withdrawal, Tehran has maintained those ties. Now it's in the framework of another adversary shared by the Taliban and Iran, which is ISIS. So in that capacity, there's been a lot of work that's being done between the two. Now, whether the Taliban are actually reliable partners for counterterrorism, that's certainly debatable, because funding in one terrorist group against another has never been a long-term strategy for any country, really. But in this context, I think Iran is trying to host its own summit, given that it's isolated from every recent international forum. Syria, they were not allowed in. The Caucasus, they were not allowed. And now Egypt. So, of course, they were trying to maybe capitalize on their eastern borders more so. But it's very unlikely that Pakistan would rely on Iranian forces or Iranian diplomatic machine to broker a deal, given that Taliban himself are very close to the Pakistani ISI. So if there's any skirmish, I think the two countries can really sort it out without Iranian help.
Bill, we have about a minute for a question.
Yeah, John, the fighting between Pakistan and the Afghan Taliban, it reminds me a lot of the Taliban clashes with the Iranians over the years. Do you think that there are similarities here in the sense that these are issues that simmer, the two sides go at it, and then they tend to return back to the norm? Or do you think this is something that's not recoverable?
The nature of these two disagreements, like you mentioned, tend to be the same. Perhaps it's a bit more intense when we talk about the case in Pakistan, given the strong Pashtun population in the area and the fact that there's just more ties between the Taliban in Pakistan and the Afghan Taliban and the Pakistan Taliban. But when we talk about the disagreements, ultimately they tend to resolve themselves. No side really wants to escalate with another. So it's unlikely for it to turn into some long-term turmoil.
Jonathan Saya of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, very generously wandering around the map with us, asking what's in it for them, Iran. Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.